Risk.
I'm not talking about the board game either. This episode we'll be exploring what it means for things that are of value to you. Would you give them up, or what do you give up to get them? We do all kinds of things in the name of risk. And in the world of risk management and insurance, I think that, you know, sometimes risk gets a bad rap, like it's a bad thing, but it also works in our favor for good. And I'm chatting through this concept with Steve Fraser. He's a National Geographic photographer. He travels the world pretty much, he said, I think in this episode he said 6 months of the year. And my good friend James Bryant from Lead Different. But just moments before this conversation, I was talking on air with Steve on the radio show that morning, and he was telling me the story about how Ducati have approached him to be a part of a group that is traveling, like just taking this motorbike all around the world. And so he has got a leg from Moscow to Japan, and so he's like traveling through just absolutely amazing terrain, so 9,000 miles, I believe, which is a long way. And he's doing this over a period of 40 days. And so he was explaining to me like some of the crazy things that he'll have to do, like sleeping out under the elements in Russia. But so just to give you a little bit of insight into what it means when he talks about risk, compared to what perhaps I mean when I talk about risk. So anyway, sit back and enjoy this episode. We're talking risk with Steve Fraser and James Bryant. So I'm joined today with my good friend James, who everyone remembers from episode 5, of course.
That's right. The famous episode 5.
Famous episode 5. Comfort level James, we call him. And our guest this morning, or today. I'm not on radio anymore. I don't have to say this morning. Steve Fraser. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you going?
Mate, I'm good. I'm glad you could join us for a chat.
Nice to be here. I didn't get invited for episode 5, so, you know.
You missed a very special episode.
Okay, I'll go back and listen to it.
Yeah, do. So, we want to introduce Steve, because I had down like that you're a National Geographic photographer. What does that even mean?
I suppose it means they publish your photos at times.
All right.
Do some different projects, particularly with the guys here in Australia, and you know they have offices here, and we work with them on doing a calendar for them next year and some different stuff.
All so right.
Yeah, it's just kind of this nice ongoing relationship.
Oh, nice. But that is that how you would normally introduce yourself? If someone asks you, what do you do, Steve?
I suppose I'd say I'm a photographer, and I spend lots of time in the wilderness and working on different adventures.
Right. You know,
so, and then it varies from there. But yeah. That's fundamentally what I do.
Yeah.
You know, go out and have fun, take photos.
Wow. Yeah, and we've been chatting for about an hour now before recording this particular episode. So we've been hearing all of Steve's stories. So many, like really just out of the ordinary stuff. So like, for instance, James, what just stood out to you then about some of Steve's stories?
The fact that the way Steve instantly says yes to stuff that sounds crazy. Like riding a motorbike from Moscow to Japan, which probably means you're going to use a boat somewhere in there as well. But
I hope so.
Yeah. But that is insane. But it sounds like it took you all of about 20 seconds to say yes.
Yeah, probably about 20 minutes. But yeah, it was about that. I just, you know, talked to my wife and made sure she would still be there when I got home.
But that's insane. And the level of respect for that. I feel old at 37. And I'm like, oh, you know, things don't work as well. I'm guessing just from some of your history, you're a bit older than 37.
Just a little bit, yeah.
But yet you're still 20 minutes to say yes to that. Yeah, that's I really respect that. Just that level of courage that you do that. The fact, and we've talked before, and you said you're actually your official training. You're a mechanic, right?
Yeah, by when I left school, I went and did an apprenticeship as a mechanic. So that's my training. I've done a little bit of university stuff along the way, you know, around leadership and management. But no, my background is if someone really asks, yeah, I'm a mechanic.
It'll probably serve you well in Siberia.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, on your maybe own that, on a motorbike. Maybe that's why they chose me.
But to go from that to then you're quite high up in John Hughes, should we say that?
Yeah, it was one of the owners with John. Yep.
John Hughes,
yeah,
all the Perth people
yeah.
know John.
Yeah.
Mr. Carman. Yeah.
Yeah, what's his tagline again? It's
brilliant.
Pick your dealer before you
choose your dealer before you choose your car.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm doing the ads for him.
Yeah, there we go. Should get a kickback.
Thanks, John.
but to go from that to a photographer, mechanic to owner of John Hughes to photographer, those things seem pretty random, and yet you've done that journey and succeeded pretty much. Like, you're not, you don't look like you're starving. You did talk about having a house to go back to.
Yes, I think we're still doing fine.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Those risks and transitions, I think that's remarkable to make that journey and to not have been homeless anywhere along the way.
How much are you out during the year, like away from home?
It's probably 6 months.
Right.
You know, somewhere around there. It varies. I've had years that are worse than that. And so, but, you know.
When you say worse, you mean away more or
away,
home more?
Yeah, no, yeah. Away
which
more.
Which one's better?
I suppose I do miss.
We just gained a little bit of insight into Steve.
When you start to get a lot of time away, then you certainly miss friends, family, back home. You know, there's some key events. I think the last 3 or 4 years I've been away for my birthday.
Right.
You know, I've been away for a couple of my kids, you know, so they're those key milestones, you know, this Russia trip means I'm away for my wedding anniversary.
Wow.
You know, so there are things that actually at a personal level, obviously really matter to you.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I think when you say yes to something, there's always something else that you miss out on.
Yeah.
And you've got to be happy with what you said yes to.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people don't say yes to something because they go, oh, look at all the things that I've already got. You know, so yeah. I've got my birthday coming up. I've got my wedding anniversary. I've got my friends, you know, having this engagement party or whatever it is. And it might actually stop you stepping into that because you do miss out on stuff. So when you say yes, all of a sudden, every single time I think nowadays I say yes to something, I miss out on something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said yes to this adventure, if you like, with Ducati. And I had to say no to my good friends at Sea Shepherd about speaking at an event for them, you know, so which I would have loved to have done,
yeah.
You know, so I didn't have a good choice and a bad choice. I had two really good choices and I was torn between making it. That's probably what took 20 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Took two to make
so
the decision.
So wasn't the wedding anniversary?
I managed to overcome it. Last year was special, so we're...
okay.
What I was going to ask, like... Because what you're describing there is like the idea of risk is that it's so grey because everything encroaches on everything when you say yes to something. So when I grew up, like they were talking about, I don't know, like a list or a hierarchy of priorities. So you put God first, then you put your family second, then you put your work, then you put, you know, like it's kind of like this little checklist.
Don't you wish life was that simple?
I was like, when is that actually useful?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I kind of wonder, like, if people, like, think like that. Maybe they do. Like, what would you say to someone who thought like that, Steve?
Yeah, I would actually say I haven't. My experience is that life is not that simple, and I think that God is woven through every single thing that we do.
Mm.
So, you know, and whether that's, you know, riding through Moscow, taking photos in Iceland, speaking at Sea Shepherd, being here today, you know, I think that's all part of who God creates us to be. And none of those are, oh, I had to put God first.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't, I suppose the reality is because I've been away for the last 3 or 4 weeks and I've been working in that time, you know, I haven't made it to church till last week. Does that make me a bad person? I don't
very,
think so.
Oh.
Yeah, does it?
Oh,
very?
Sorry. I was going to judge you. Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, yeah, knock yourself out.
Okay.
But, because God's still in the midst of those. I had some amazing conversations with people about life and the struggles they're going through. And I would never have had those if I had not said yes to going to Italy and doing the stuff I did.
Yeah.
So I just think when you try and make it that, I don't think life's that simple.
Mm. For me, that's an easy thing to understand. I guess like where it comes a bit trickier is because I have a young family and I have my wife and I've been married for 8 years now, like, still relatively young. How do you negotiate these kind of things? Is it a negotiation with your wife, or do you guys just have like this thing where, hey, what did you say yes to today?
Some days it's a bit like that. I think there's also, I'd say, about one of the things about risk and doing things is that there are seasons.
Right.
And you have to recognize those seasons in life.
Right.
So, you know, when you're, 22 and you decide to go backpacking through Europe, it's a risk, but there's not a lot of implications to the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, so if you look at it, there's no young family, there's no partner generally, you know, so off you go and you have this amazing 1 or 2 year experience. All of a sudden you're 35 and you've got a young family and they need you to be there. You can't just up and leave and go, now's my time.
Mm.
So timing with risk becomes really important. You know, I'm at a fortunate stage of life where my children are adults, grown up. You know, they hopefully they still need dad around, but they don't need me every day. You know, that's not what you're there for. So making those decisions becomes simpler. And I think you've got to recognize the season that you're in, and be aware of that you do have some obligations. You know, your family desperately need you when they're small and they're growing up, and your wife desperately needs you. You know. But that does change.
Yeah.
I have a 1-month-old baby, so when you say your wife desperately needs you,
you know exactly.
Oh, yes.
Should you really be here?
Probably not. There's a risk being here.
Probably one of the biggest risks that I've taken, and I'm not sure why it was a risk in hindsight now, but recently was involved with James. James made me take the risk. So I wanted to thank you in this space, James.
Okay.
For inspiring that risky life within me, because it was all about my career at that time. I was involved in working something that wasn't. It was the opposite of energizing. It was draining.
Right.
And I couldn't even see it within that time. So, when I was so engulfed in a certain circumstance that I couldn't see beyond that, and so that the lack of ability to be able to see something, it was unclear. So, you know, it's something that I would have had to change. It's something that I was uncertain, which brings fear, which brings, whenever you try and step out of that, that's a huge risk.
It is.
So for me, that was a really liberating decision to stop doing that and start looking for something else, which is why I'm working here now. We're in the radio station studio is where I work now. But that risk paid off.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it was scary though. Having walked that journey with you, it was interesting going along the way and going, wow, we don't know when this is actually going to turn out, but
or if.
If it's going to turn out. Yeah. But of interest, today I was watching something and I found out, this might actually engage the sea shepherd side of you, Steve, but I found out that they've never actually been able to keep great white sharks in captivity. And a marine biologist has said, as soon as you put a great white shark in captivity, it begins the process of dying.
Correct.
Wow.
Straight away.
Yep.
To the point where if you get an adult great white shark and you put it in captivity and you keep it in for 3 days and then release it again, it'll probably be dead within a month.
Is that right? For 3 days?
Even for 3 days. The great white shark will damage itself banging against the sides of the tank. It just can't understand being put in there. Even to the point where they put them in captivity, they put them in this harness, they put them an IV in them, and they still die. They just cannot keep them alive in captivity. And as I was listening to this, because with Lead Different, we've been talking about risk this whole month, and I thought, so many times our fear of risk becomes these walls, and those walls end up, once we begin to put those walls in place, we actually begin the process of dying, just like a shark.
Yep.
And it's interesting when you're talking about where you were at, where I remember going away from meeting with you and your wife one time, my wife and I were driving away, and I was like, man, he's going to die if he doesn't get out soon.
It was true. I would become a certain person. Like, I would change demeanor even within my own family's experience and setting. Like, when I was leading into going into a shift and coming away, I would,
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly my experience and one of the key reasons for reinventing my life from the corporate world was that I found I was becoming someone, and I could see, play the tape forward another 10 years or so, that, you know, you could have been a really well-off, unhappy business guy.
Wow.
That wasn't the person you hoped and dreamed of in life. So, and that was quite hard because you're doing something that you're actually really successful at.
Yeah.
You're really good at. Everyone looks from the outside and says, wow, you've just got it all together. You've got a nice home and a nice car and you travel up the front of aeroplanes and you go to all these wonderful places on holiday.
Yeah.
And you go, and I'm not enjoying it. None of this I like.
Wow.
And I don't like what I'm becoming because it was I found it a very negative environment. So you start to become that negative person. You start to feel like, is this who I'm meant to be in life? And that was one of the key decisions. I said, no, this is not what I want to be in life. And I think one of the keys that you've hit on that we're going to talk about at The Lead Different is having the right people around you, choosing the right friends who will actually inspire you and say, no, come on, you can do better than this. You are better than this. You're
yeah.
meant for better than this. Your life is meant to be more significant, more meaningful, more noble than
yeah.
doing a job that you feel is mundane, draining, not inspiring.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of us can get that way because it's conditioning through life.
Yeah.
You know, that there are enough people, and that's why you need good people around you encouraging you, because there are enough people that will knock you, that'll be negative, say, oh, you can't do that. You can't, and you start to listen to it.
Yeah.
I grew up in that environment. We're going to talk about that. You know, I grew up in an environment that said, oh, I don't think you're that smart. I don't think you can really achieve these things. You should leave school early.
Wow.
And go and if you did really, really, really well, you could get an apprenticeship. So that was the height of what my folks thought I could achieve.
Yeah, wow. That was the pinnacle. Like.
Because it's where their background was.
And you believed it? You took
total,
it on?
Yeah, they, took it on. I went from having no concept of what my life might look like and going, as a kid, I was really good at sport. School was just okay. I didn't mind it, didn't love it. You know,
yeah.
It was like, and all of a sudden they sat me down one day and said, hey, you know, we're worried about your future. I went, wow, I hadn't even thought about it. I'm 16.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, we don't think you're that smart that you'd go to uni. So that was a bit of a culture shock for
yeah.
me. You know, if you could go and get this apprenticeship. So when I went and applied for a number of apprenticeships, they sat me down in one that had a few. And this is how much other people influence you, is that there was a panel of people. And I thought it had gone really well. This interview had gone great. And they said, now we've got an apprenticeship for a mechanic and an apprenticeship for an electrician. Which one are you actually applying for? And all I could hear in the back of my head was my folks saying, you're not that smart. And I knew that you didn't have to be quite as smart to be a mechanic
wow.
as an electrician. So my life-defining choice at 16 years old was based on this ringing in my head of, oh, no, I'm here to be a mechanic.
Wow.
Now, a year later, the guy that asked that question came up to me and said, we were so surprised that you chose to be a mechanic because you were the best applicant we had.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I've got a great metaphor for that I use preaching to high schoolers once. But just brought it back then. But like those little bugs, I think they're like fleas, but I think they call them Mexican jumping fleas or something or other. They can jump like something ridiculous, like 1,000 times higher than their body size.
Right.
Like they can jump like a meter in the air.
I can do that too.
But like they put them in a setting where they put them in a box and they keep on hitting the box roof, obviously. And then when, you know, after a certain amount of time, they open up the box and the fleas all just stay in there because they're never jumping up any higher than that.
Yep.
That time. And so, yeah, for you, that was your parents were that
yeah.
Unfortunate. Sorry,
yeah, no, no, that's
speak ill of your parents.
No, no, it's a reality.
That voice was a lid that goes, oh, well, yeah. I guess I'll jump that high.
So then when you find people in life that actually say, no, hey, you can be far more than this, you can do more, you can achieve more, you were made to be something more, then it takes a long time to undo that conditioning.
Yeah.
But you can do it. But you can't do it if you surround yourself with people who are negative.
And you can't do it without saying yes and taking the
exactly.
risks.
You yeah. have to say, sometimes, honestly, it's just as simple as saying yes and then working out, how on earth am I going to do this?
Yeah.
How am I going to work through it? And as I say, it can be stressful and you've got all these things, but when you've done it, there's never been any of those I go, I really regret saying yes to that.
What,
yeah.
Just go back, what actually happened in you when that, I guess the guy who interviewed you for the apprenticeship and he came and said, oh, we were surprised that you said Yes. Oh, to the mechanics apprenticeship because you were the brightest. What actually happened in you in that moment?
I think I was disappointed in myself. Right. I thought, wow, because I had been convinced by other people in this case that I wasn't that great, and I was just so grateful in the end when they offered me a job. I was like, wow, I've achieved in life what my folks hoped for me.
Yeah.
Wow, I've made it. I've done well.
Yeah.
So I think when he said that, it was surprising. It was encouraging in one sense.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, wow. So you were in this quandary of, so I'm better than maybe my folks thought, but I let myself, and you know, you're 17 at that stage, you're just going, I'm just working, trying to work out what life looks like. So it's an interesting journey, but when you hear enough of those people, enough of them over 20 and 30 and 40 years say, you know what, you can be something more, you can do this, that you're meant to be better than this, and you start saying yes a bit more often, it is that it's practice. So risk is, you know, and it's each one of us, our risk threshold, if you like, is totally different.
Yeah.
Because I know people who every single day will dive and get in there with big sharks.
Mm.
So to get in, you know, for them, that the risk of getting in, no big deal. Mm. But for someone who snorkels once a year and say, hey, let's put you in with 3 and 4 meter sharks, it's terrifying risk.
Yeah.
You know, so that we grow that muscle as we go. You know, that's part of the challenge. The more you start to say yes, the easier it becomes and the less risky it becomes. So and the less fear. Fear is a huge factor.
So when you transitioned from obviously the world of cars, John Hughes, to becoming a photographer, around what age did that happen? And do you remember anything in... Because it sounds like you didn't like who you were in that world.
Yeah.
What was it that was happening that was pushing you out of that and thought, maybe I can use a camera to make a living?
Yeah, well, look, photography had always been a part. Dad had been a really keen photographer. So we had a dark room at home, you know, all of his life.
Wow.
So it had always been around. It had been a hobby, you know, and I grew up in the Pilbara, so I loved getting out in the bush and exploring, which then, you know, that was the motorbike connection, had a little bike and you'd go riding in the bush for, you know, as long as you could.
Yeah.
So you kind of loved that environment and the camera was around. So, but it was a hobby that would come and go, you know, I'd get keen on a while, but then all of a sudden you'd meet your future wife and that was your whole focus in life, and then children would come along. So all those things happened that, you know, would, and then kids would get a bit older and we'd go on holiday somewhere nice, so the camera would come back out.
Yeah.
And, but I never, so I suppose I got to a point where I said, I love this, but I never want to get my ambitions and my abilities mixed up. And we often can do that, you know, so it's one thing to say, I love being out there taking photos.
Yeah.
To then, can I actually do this at the highest level and make a living at it?
Right. So what you're saying is my iPhone photos won't get bought by National Geographic?
But they might get bought by someone. There's all these iPhones.
Did you just say your iPhone? You don't have
I don't have an iPhone,
I know, James.
I know, but you've got an iPhone.
Android through and through.
Yeah.
I suppose that was part of that. That photography had always been this love and desire.
Yeah.
And I went, I love who I become when I'm out there.
Right.
You know, that I become a much more peaceful, happy person.
Yeah.
It's a world that inspires me, you know, being able to see nature, and that's what I work in, wilderness. So I said to Elaine one day, this is not who I want to become, because they would talk about, I think the acronym was Holiday Steve, you know, that when Dad was on holidays or that all of a sudden he became this really nice, happy person, that when he was at work, he was intense and focused. And I wasn't, you know, angry or upset, but you were just very single-minded focus. And I could see that's not where I wanted to end up.
How old were your kids at this point?
Kids were...
Were they calling you Holiday Steve? Holiday Dad?
Teenagers.
Teenagers, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Huge.
That's interesting. I'm just enjoying this because I've got two young kids. And
Yeah.
I'm working in a job that I actually love, that is a big part of what I dream, but I've been in jobs where I'm like, if I do this for a day longer, I don't know how I can live with myself.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's interesting hearing.
And I meet so many people who would say, I love what you're doing. I wish I could do something in life I enjoy because I don't like my job.
Yeah.
And I would say change.
Yeah.
change.
Right. I would too.
Because
I've done that.
we live in a society, and all of the people who are listening pretty much live in this society because they have the ability to be able to hear MP3 audio coming through their phone. Like
they have an internet connection.
We have such a big advantage to be able to do that. Like we can change. Like you don't have to live out the typical life.
Yet. And you don't need, you know, I think we get caught up in we need a certain amount of money to live a certain life. I've met people who were, I've met an American guy who got disillusioned with his work and he now works on an island, remote island in Tonga and, you know, probably earns the equivalent of 20 grand a year.
Yeah.
But lives like a king, loves his life. He's out there doing whale tours and all sorts of stuff and just loves his life from being this corporate guy making probably 10 times that much and unhappy. So I think we do get caught up with the money thing at times.
Yeah.
And I'd say to people, if you know, if you're doing something that you get up in the morning and loathe the thought of going to work, why on earth would you do it? You know, life is way too short for that. And it's not who you're meant to be. You can't survive in an environment where you go, I don't enjoy this, I don't like it, it's draining, but I just have to do it.
Yeah.
You may have to do it for a very short season.
Yeah.
You know, because you do have commitments.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that for your whole life. You know?
Gold.
One of the fun things I've been doing lately is this idea of revisionist history. Instead of being revisionist history, going revisionist, what do I know? And so what do I know to be true? And actually analyzing it, the idea with revisionist history is like, what do we know that has happened? Wait, did that actually happen in history? That the winner told the story and it happened a certain way, or did it happen differently? And the idea of what do I know to be true is, what do I know to be true? Okay, I need this to live. Like I need whatever amount of money, I need this and this. And go, is that actually true?
Right.
And actually going through and revising what I know to be true.
Yeah.
And it's interesting doing that and coming out the other side, going, a lot of what I knew to be true isn't actually 100% true. It's just
lying.
Something that I picked up along the way. And it's affecting how I live my life, and I don't like who I'm becoming because of the way it's affecting how I live my life. Very interesting exercise I'm doing at the moment.
Wow, yeah.
Mm.
There's some homework for everyone.
Yeah, revisionist history or revisionist what do I know to be true.
James Bryant from leaddifferent.org.
Org. Without the question mark at the end.
.org.au?
No, .au. Just .org.
Leaddifferent.org.
Yeah.
And Steve Fraser, do you have a... You've got a photography website, don't you?
Yes, just my name, stevefraser.co, C-O.
Fraser, how do you spell it?
F-R-A-S-E-R.
S-E-R, there you go.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
This podcast has been produced by mindhivenetwork.com.